Recording now. Hi, greetings everybody. Welcome. This is Wesley Pepper. This is the Art Lakes Podcast. This is episode 143. And you can tell with way all this, it's nice and cool in the southern hemisphere. If you're in South Africa or anywhere, it's a nice and cool morning. But I like it like that, to be honest. So to all my new guests, new and returning listeners, much love and welcome to everybody. Welcome to everybody. Today we are talking, we're talking about the multi-award-winning play, The King of Broken Things, and I'm talking to the writer and director, Michael Taylor-Broderick. Let's jump into it. Michael, good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Good morning to you too.
I can see you from Durban. We spoke to Brindy, but it's nice and cool there in Joburg. So, one thing about a nice cool morning, it always gets the energy and the blood rushing early on. So I hope you're very energized. I know your play is starting today.
Yeah, I'm not used to the cold, let me tell you. But there's something about being in Johannesburg, you know, there's a vibe here that you can't deny, you know. Durban, we are so laid back and apathetic, whereas here, you're just on the go and you can just feel it, eh? It's quite something.
Yeah, it's quite something special. And the Market Theatre, a very special place. It's a very special place and people appreciate theatre and that's always lovely, man. So, Michael, let's actually jump into it, man. I was reading up about your play, The King of Broken Things, and there's something I actually wanted to read, which I think it's quite strong, man. And it says, the world does its best to break everyone and everything, but afterwards, most things are stronger in their broken places. The king of broken things, an adventurous and magical excursion into the rehabilitation of broken and discarded objects, hearts included. I love that. I love that. It's very conceptual. I'm a visual artist by trade or whatever, but like, you know, visual artist might be. And that first answer really is very, very conceptual. So let's start at the beginning, man. Can you just tell us a little bit about the play? So sort of like how it was conceptualized, and then we can go into what it was about and and everything else about it.
Sure. So the play is not that new. It was written in 2018, but we just started to get some momentum with the show. We ended up going to Dubai with it. We played one or two festivals, and then COVID came. And, yeah. You know, as you know, our industry just got shut down. So we're so grateful that we've managed to get momentum back. And since 2021, we've actually been flying. So that is, I'm very grateful and cognizant of the fact that we're very fortunate to have been able to resurrect it, and now it's really getting traction. That's the one thing I'd like to share. But the play came about because this show is completely influenced by my two boys. I have two young boys. Okay. When I first wrote the play, they were 5 and 7 years old, 4 and 6, somewhere around there. And I'm an older dad, and I was quite fascinated by their take on the world. You know, they were forever up saying, "Oh, Dad, look at this," and "Dad, can we make this?" and "Dad, can we do this?" And it struck me that, like, I'd lost that as an adult, you know, in my late 40s, just thinking, like, why don't we see the world like that anymore? Where, at what point do we just stop dreaming and believing and imagining wonderful things? And I started to listen to them. I started to take notes of what they were saying and what they were observing. And I made a pact with myself to actually share that with the world and almost challenge adults to go back to their childhood and not live this sort of boxed in, life is too busy to enjoy the things that we really love. And that's what the play is about. It's about everyone trying to, I don't know, recapture the beauty and joy that the world has to offer. That's what it is.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And as I said, I think the metaphor of broken things, I think it's very, it really captures this post-pandemic kind of world where everything seems a bit scattered and all over the place, but there's some form of sense around that. You know, I know as a visual artist, my studio was always busy and it looks untidy, but there's a method in that like untidiness and that broken. You know, there's a sense of security and comfort I actually find in that. So I'm sort of relating on that level. I also love what you're saying about the how can I say the when you say broken things, the first thing that comes to my mind is that the theater, the stage is full of props and stuff like that. Is that,
yes,
is that, am I on the right track there?
Absolutely, you are. So, you know, when we initially started touring with the show, there's a lot of themes that run through the show. You know, broken things being mended. You know, whatever it is, we should not just discard something without having a look at it and see if we can mend it or turn it into something else. So there's that. It's also about us as humans, how broken we all are. We're all broken in some way, some more than others. But the show gives you an opportunity to acknowledge your brokenness, you know, and to own up to it and say, well, okay, I've got this fault or that fault, and I can fix that. Let me see how I can fix it. So there is that. But there's also other things like, you know, we touch on the environment and how important it is to be conscious of what you throw away. And the things that you have, don't just throw them away, try and reuse them. Recycling is a theme that's in the play. So we do try along the way to pick up bits and pieces in that we find in the vicinity of where we are, like old cardboard boxes, and we'll just find them back or something that's in the on the rubbish dump, and we'll add it to the set.
I think it just flows. Sorry about that. Yeah,
cool. We're back on.
The screen just froze or whatever. So
that's fine.
Where were we? Just take about 30 seconds, just if you can actually remember, or just the last point.
No,
pick it up from there.
Absolutely. So what I was saying, that the show has many themes that runs through it. And you know, from the brokenness of things that we have in everyday life to brokenness of humans, you know, as I said, we're all broken in some way. And this show gives you an opportunity to acknowledge those things, own up to them, whatever faults we have, and go away and see how you can fix them. You know, because there's a lot of things in the world that we just discard without giving them a second chance. That's a very strong theme in the play. Also just the environment, how we shouldn't just discard of things, how we shouldn't waste is a thing. You know, we're really killing this beautiful world we live in. So we try wherever we go to add bits and pieces of junk that we find backstage or outside, and we try and add it to the set just to add some kind of authenticity, also to be true to the message we're putting out there. So yes, the stage is full of stuff, and as we go on, we end up collecting and keeping things that we become quite attached to, that we feel add so much to the set. So that's you're bang on there with that question you asked.
Yeah, that sounds actually quite full. Just another observation. I know that you're living in this very visual age that we were with social media and so forth, that our eyes are used to a lot of things. We're almost used to that. So if you see something almost minimalistic or simplistic, it's almost like a step back. Like, I guess the eye is always used to jumping up and all around, sort of making sense. And I know that with the older... for the working class or older people, you sort of like, I know I do that. If I see so multiple things and I hear text, and I'm trying to see, okay, so what does this object mean? What is the poet or the writer saying, and how does it relate to each other? I kind of like it. It almost sounds interactive. Is that also part of what you're trying to get across?
Yes, in a way. So, you know, I'm a great believer in, I don't know if you're aware, you must be aware of the term, the fourth wall in theater, where there's this divide between the audience and the performer. And I'm, as a director, and the shows that I tend to do, I like to break that. I like to make the audience feel included. I like to make them feel like they're part of what's happening and they're included in that. So it's not, it's interactive in that the performer includes them in what's going on. The performer builds and shows off a lot of these contraptions that she's built or this little boy has built. So there is very much what you're asking. There is this kind of inclusivity. Inclusivity, is that right? Yes. With the performer and audience, you know, it's not an audience participation, but they do get included in his journey. It's a style that I like, and I like to, I often try and break that fourth wall. You know, I'm not a great traditionalist.
Yeah, that's a very cool thing, man. So just I want to get into let me just take a step back. So you're saying is most of your plays written sort of on the same how can I say using the fourth wall? Is most of your plays include that?
Yes, I do like that. You know, I'm a bit worried with I'm concerned with the younger generation, how times have changed, and you know, this old staid approach to certain things. You know, we've got to be open to changing, and we've got to be open to being more inclusive. So yes, I do try. I mean, not all plays lend themselves to that, but I do enjoy, you know, just saying no fourth wall. You're here, I'm here. Let's engage.
That actually reminds me of something. So I talk about this often on this podcast. Is the rise of technology, how technology is influencing artist processes, especially now with AI. I talk extensively on that, and actually what you said reminds me of something. I'd like to get your viewpoints on that. So I mean if you think of current theater, especially like post pandemic, people's habits have changed, people's lives have become more busier and less busy, more stressful and so forth. As a theater practitioner, as a writer, as a director, do you feel some form of, not necessarily social responsibility, but do you feel like your art is supposed to reflect or write or heal or do something around that? Do you feel your art must sort of mirror that?
You know, I in a way, yes. You know, I feel like I have a calling in life, and well, wherever you think that may have come from, I do feel that I have something to say. I'd like people to hear it, and I do believe I want to change the world for the better in my own small way. You know, and one of the things that is mentioned quite often in the play is about starting with the small things, and the bigger things will fix themselves. And that's, you know, if I go out and I've got this theater work that I've put on and someone in that audience goes away thinking, you know what, I need to change the way I look at the world. If I looked at the world like that, I think my life would be better. And then someone else who's in contact with them will also be affected by that. And so it goes, you know, and that's a very strong theme in the play. I do feel there is a responsibility with artists to actually change the narrative of people, you know, and however you do that, you know, this is my way. It may not, a lot of people may not agree with it, but I have something to say. I'd like you to hear it. Hopefully I can change the way you think in some way for the better. I'm a very positive, hopeful person, an optimist. Because I think there's no other way to be honest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to salute you on that. I know of many artists, just an interesting point. Because on this platform, I talk to many artists, and a lot of, I would say the almost overwhelming majority of artists is sort of moving the art into more of a healing space, more as a tool, not necessarily like delusions of grandeur, like you're going to fix all the world's problems, but I think it's just like a lot of creators have identified that their role in society has changed slightly. For more practical. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, sorry man, there's some technical glitches here. Are you still there?
Yeah,
I
I'm still here.
Oh yeah, it must be a network
I'm
thing.
still here.
Yeah man, actually let's just move on man. I want to talk about the lead actor. So it's a one man play. Clara Roberts, can you just tell
Yes.
us a little bit about her?
She is a young lady that I think she's done quite a few film, quite a bit of film and TV work. She was in Black Sails, which was, I think, quite a popular TV series, and I think it was on Netflix. And I stumbled across her quite by accident in that when I was trying to cast the play, a very good friend of mine said to me, you need to get a female to play the role of the boy. Obviously, I can't cast a young boy 11 or 12 years old because he just doesn't have the emotional capacity to play it. And she said the reason is because most females are far more in touch with their inner child, and they're far more sensitive to a lot of the content that you're speaking about. And I listened to him, and a friend of mine suggested I get hold of his girlfriend, Carrie Roberts, who I hadn't met. I sent her the script. She eventually, when I got hold of her again after sending the script, she said to me, "You made me cry." And I promise you, over the phone, I said, "You've got the role. Come to Durban, let's start working." As simple as that. And you know, some things I believe are given to us. The universe gifts us with things. I think I was gifted with the script. I was gifted with Cara as an actress. And she is the most generous performer. And like I said about the fourth wall, there's something about Cara when she's on that stage, you just connect. She gives so much of herself, which allows the audience to give back to her. You know, so it's a two-way thing. And I find with performance, a generous performer is the best kind of performer. You know, they're just so giving of themselves. She leaves it out there. Every little bit of her is out there on that stage. And it's an emotional piece for her. And she's just the most incredible. I would never do this play with anyone else. Full stop. When she gets too old to play the role, someone else can try. So, but she is the most amazing, giving, adaptable. She's amazing. I can't say more than that.
No, I get it. I just want to highlight a point that you mentioned. Like, yeah, sometimes you just know, like, there's just an energy or something. You just know. You can't explain it. You just know. And I guess the artist community knows exactly what we're talking about over
Yeah,
there. Exactly.
absolutely.
Can you just break us down, like, I guess, like the overall, like the story of the play and like the length, and then we can move into like where's it been shown. So I know you guys are running from
Sure.
the 5th till the 23rd of June, but we can also talk about where else the play was. I know you guys were at the Baxter Theatre. You
Sure.
say you guys were in
Sure.
Europe, not in Europe, in Dubai, you said, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So the show runs for 50 minutes. So, you know, it's not taxing on people, with younger people. So 50 minutes, and it's the show is about a young boy who is in his workshop dealing with loss. He's dealing with loss and abandonment, but he's found a way to cope. And he's incredibly imaginative. He builds all these wonderful things, inventive, clever things out of broken and discarded things. There's themes of, there's quite a bit of Japanese mythology that runs through it in terms of the term of
Okay,
kintsugi. I don't
interesting.
know if you know what that is. Kintsugi features, and he references things that are, and he's a smart guy, but he's it's not overt, but clearly this boy is obviously he's teased, and that's quite clear. He's teased and bullied for being quite unusual at school, and he's also on a spectrum in some way, you know, so he's unusual, and that is a thing that is not overt, but it you do if you watch closely enough, you'll see that there are things that are show that he's got those issues. We've been very fortunate with this play. We've been to Dubai, we've been to Bulgaria. There's some interesting technology that happens in the show. And we went to a puppet festival by invite in Bulgaria, and we it was it was we were playing alongside people from Kazakhstan, from Turkey, from Italy. And we were very fortunate, and we won 3 awards at that. There's a jury and they vote, which was very interesting because it's predominantly, they speak Russian and Bulgarian. So we were very worried that, you know, and this is dialogue driven, that we were worried that people wouldn't get the essence of what's going on, but they just loved it and they loved us. And then we came back and we played at the National Arts Festival and we won a Gold Ovation Award. Then we went on to Wurtfest in Stellenbosch. We won an award there. We played at the Drama. Yeah, we played at the Drama Factory in Somerset West and we went on to win a Theatre Cup Award. So the show is a family-driven show, and often we're placed in the children's category, but we're not a children's show. We're more a family show. There's a lot of stuff that adults will take away from this, and kids as well. And I say the age restriction is 10, but you know, younger can cope, but I just don't want them to get lost in a lot of the wordiness of it. But there's also a lot of visual things that happen. And then what else did I need to cover on that? Oh, we play at the Market Theatre in the Manny Manum, as you said, from the 5th to the 23rd. That's Wednesday to Sunday. Evenings are 7 p.m. except the Sunday. There's a matinee at 3, and there's a matinee on Saturdays as well at 3 p.m. And I think the ticket prices are 100 to 200, depending on students, adults, whatever. And it's at web tickets you can book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I cover everything.
Yeah, just for my listeners, I'll add a link to the ticket sales and all of that in the description. Cool. I'll add all of that. I just want to ask, like you were saying, that that you have a restriction from 10 years up. Do you get a lot of children or young? Is a demographic quite young that's coming to the play?
Yeah, often we do. And the performer loves it when kids are in because they're quite vocal. You know, if he comes out with something, and there's some quite interesting things and things that he builds and he pulls out, and the kids often will vocally respond, which helps her, you know, because then again, that fourth wall thing is broken, you know, it's not there. And we do. And surprising enough, they're not that fidgety. You know, they're actually quite engaged. Also because the show is written, and as I said again, I feel I was gifted with the text. It's written in the style of a 10, 12-year-old boy. And, you know, kids tell it like it is. You know, they don't beat around the bush. If they have something to say, they'll say it. You know, they're not worried about who they're going to offend or whether it sounds odd or not. So they can engage with the text because it's spoken in a way that they can easily understand. So that's often a very useful thing when kids are in.
Fantastic, man. Fantastic. So your timing is also pretty good. I think there's a school holiday in a week's time or coming up or something like that. So I know it's nice and cold. So for all the moms and dads out there, definitely I highly recommend you guys to make a mission to the Market Theatre. Just a last question, Michael. So it starts today on the 5th of June. Is it tonight at 8 o'clock or do you have a meeting? This afternoon
with the
matinee show.
Sorry, what was the question?
You guys are starting today on the 5th. So is the opening production of this evening or is it this afternoon?
So we are doing an official opening night tomorrow night. This evening we'll just do a preview of a kind. But official opening night is tomorrow. At this stage, that's what we're doing, the way we're doing it. So the way that it's been scheduled is just purely the Market Theatre. They wanted to try capture some kids in the holidays. It's all Greg's doing, Greg Homan, the artistic director, who we're very grateful to for actually bringing us here, by the way.
The Market Theatre is a really special place. I've got very, very fond memories of not just watching plays, but just being involved with all the art around it. It's a very special place. It sounds, as I said, just to in the beginning, when I was reading up about it, it seemed incredibly visual and it seemed incredibly conceptual. So as much as you're saying it's like for kids, I'm a quote-unquote adult and I'm interested because I love that sort of like organized noise or organized mess or Yeah, let me use this, both of those metaphors, like on stage. I love that type of thing, and I love all the audience engaging, because I also feel that, like, you know, we're living in this age where technology is taking up so much of our attention, that creators, we have to be pretty clever to keep people's attention. Because I know from a visual art perspective, as well, and even in music, to keep people's attention span is becoming quite a skill that I think people don't give artists enough credit about. So many, many congrats to that. And as a multi-award winning player as well. So many, many congrats to that, Michael. And yeah, I mean, all the best for
Thank
today.
You.
For the next
3 days,
what's that, 2.5 weeks? My math is not that sharp. Yeah,
yeah.
Almost a month. And throughout the school holidays. And I said, I will definitely add the description of all the, you know, where you can get tickets and
sure.
the market theaters link in the in the description. And yeah, man, Michael, thank you very much for coming through. I seriously appreciate it. All the best with the play. And yeah, hopefully we'll talk soon.
Thank you, and thanks for your time. Thank you.
Yeah,
hope to see I you here.
Yeah. I'm actually coming to Joburg soon. In next month, actually. I will publish this episode probably this evening. I'll probably publish this evening, and I'll chop it up into shorts as well. So I do that with all my shows, and that's a very good way of, like, sort of marketing and keeping it, you know, on people's social media pages.
Yes.
And yeah, I will be letting Bridget and yourself know. So I'll send you guys all the links as soon as it's up. And yeah, all the best with the play. It sounds fantastic. And it's nice and cold, so I hope you get some coffee or something warm to drink, and maybe calm the nerves for this evening's performance.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Thanks,
have a good
Michael.
Day.
Thank you, my brother. Cheers, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.